Welcome to Sports and a Slice of Life. And now, here's your host, Dave Lewis.
You know I had to play this for you, right?
I know. I appreciate that. Oh, my faves.
Yeah. Taking me back to my top 40 days when I was a DJ. That right? one, playing that one for Krista on the Peninsula, that was Pink. And What About Us, everybody?
Love it.
How about you and me sometime, cruising down 101, windows rolled down, we're playing Pink, we're talking basketball, talking life.
Right? We could write a book, probably, with as many stories as the combination of the two of us probably have, that's for sure.
Hey, since I played one of your favorite artists, what is your favorite Pink song, if it's not What About Us?
Oh, boy. I just love her, the sound, her energy. Usually she just kind of pumps me up if I've got to clean the house or whatever I've got to do. I kind of like Raise Your Glass. That's one of my, I like that one as well.
I'm saving that one for the end then.
Yep, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Krista,
you can't go wrong, really.
Oh, no. There's so many. You and I are going to have music. We'll talk cooking. We'll get caught up on everything.
All right.
Krista, I had to get you on because I saw the tweet last week about you getting the call, and that's really the top of my bucket list, you getting to work the Tokyo Olympics. How'd that go down?
Wow, Dave, I have wanted to be a part of it for so long, way back when you thought you could be an Olympic athlete, you know, back way, way back. Then when you realize that's not happening, then, you know, taking this crazy career path and working in the broadcasting industry and just a major, major goal, like you said, bucket list to be a part of this event. I started reaching out back in early 2000s, just started sending demo, just touching base, usually about once a year, you know, hey, you know, don't forget about me, keep me in mind, that kind of thing. And then finally got a voicemail. I had gotten an email saying there might be something and then didn't hear anything and then got a voicemail or a message saying, hey, are you interested? Give us a call back. So, you know, that's where I'm running around the house and my dog thinks I'm crazy, but it was a pretty exciting moment for many, many years of just probably bugging them and they got tired of me bugging them.
They're lucky to have you, Krista, really.
Thanks, Dave.
Hey, when we were talking today via text, you were waiting to get your assignments, like what sports you'd be covering. So do you know yet?
Yes, the anticipation. And finally today, I've been told that I'm part of the swing team. So there's just a handful of us that will cover about 12 different events, but they narrowed it down for us. And so I will have two events. One will basically go the entire first week, and the second will go the entire second week. So my focus will be judo and artistic swimming.
How do you prepare? No, you've never done judo or artistic right? swimming, right?
So. No. Well, yeah, definitely not. Definitely not judo. I'm not much of a fighter of any sort. So to even any kind of physical contact like that, other than on the basketball court, that was about as close as it came for me. And artistic swimming, I'm definitely a dog paddler in the pool. Much more of a lay on the raft and float around kind of person. But It just this year, it had changed internationally, the name, but just this year for the USA, they agreed to change it to artistic swimming. It has been synchronized swimming, which many, I'm sure, recognize that a little bit more. But it's going to take a lot of prep, and there's amazing research teams for each sport. They will just throw as much info to us as we are willing to take on. And obviously we'll do our own research also, reaching out to different federations, just trying to make sure we don't say the wrong things and really trying to get a bit of an understanding of it. I'm not going to be, I'm not going to be someone who can go out and perform in either of these events, with my research, but I will also have a former analyst that knows these sports, and I will rely on them very heavily.
Krista Blunk, you know her from the Pac-12 Network, ESPN, Westwood One. Have I left out anything?
Oh, you know, there's always others, but yeah, mostly those as of late. Yeah, those are.
I saw Krista. I was doing some digging today. I saw you actually in the sideline of a Humboldt State football game.
Right? How about that? You did do some digging.
That's commitment.
That was fun. You know, I was able to do that sideline package. That was with CBS. It was a blast because, you know, I did a couple of Division I games, but when you do some D2 or D3 sports, these are wonderful universities and colleges, and they love their sports. I mean, that their communities are all about it. So anytime we got to go there, we were treated very well. People were and they had some of the best mascots out there, Dave.
Yeah, Humboldt State, the Lumberjacks.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved it. There were some good ones for sure.
Do you find, Krista, at the D2 level, and I love in particular women's sports, they're much more appreciative and excited for you to be a part of their coverage to get the exposure?
Oh, definitely so. You know, they will build a platform for you to sit on in a gymnasium or, you know, they make sure that every individual that lives in the community, every student is there with signage and, you know, you name it. They are so excited to get the coverage, and it really is a community around so many of these programs, because that's what those towns and cities, that's what they're all about. You know, they may not have a pro team within miles and miles. So they really rally around those sports. And when they get some national coverage, they get behind it. They love it.
Krista Blunk preparing for the Summer Olympics in Tokyo. Now, I know most of the coverage will be from Connecticut in the studio, correct?
Yes. Yes. I will not be going to Tokyo. Although it is a city I would love to visit. This year, about 85% of the broadcasters will actually be in booths, and we will be in studios and not in Tokyo.
You had some exposure this last year, didn't you, with the pandemic, doing studio stuff?
Yes. Yeah. I have done, that's a big plus. Pac-12 network in particular, we've done a variety of different sports in a booth, and it's not your favorite way to do it. It's no one's favorite way to do it, watching a monitor, because and you've seen this, I'm pretty sure you've done this as well, but anytime you just have a monitor, whatever the cameras give you, that's what you see. And that's what you talk about, as opposed to being in a gym or out on a field where you see other action off to the side. What you see is what you get. And you do the best you can, and you try to make it as exciting, and you've got to create the energy there. You know, the fans aren't going to be there. You're not going to have the noise and the celebration and the excitement right beside you. So you have to try to keep your energy level up.
What are the toughest sports to do via monitor? I would imagine softball, because you can't see the ball in the air.
Yes. Yes. Softball is difficult. I find volleyball to be fairly difficult at times because it is so fast. And depending on the angle of the camera, you might miss if someone's shoulders or back is turned, maybe you can't see a number. I find that to be fairly difficult. It really comes down to those camera shots. I have done soccer as well, and I have done basketball. But again, I'd much rather be there in person. But yeah, softball and for me, volleyball, because of how fast the sport is, have been pretty tough in studio.
You've been play-by-play, you've been analyst, you've been sidelined. And I would imagine for the Olympic Games with sports that you're not as familiar with, so much of your job will be to just be solid and set up your color person.
Yeah, definitely so. It's figuring out how to make them shine, help them let everybody know the amazing athletes and what the sport is all about, and really relying on them. I will have the knowledge of the sports, but you know, there's no way that I can understand it like an Olympian can. And so I will be making sure that I keep setting them up at every opportunity.
You were saying that you bugged NBC enough until I finally hired you. Who did you bug to get that first job where they just said, all right, God, let's put this former basketball player on?
Yeah. You mean way back in the day?
Yeah. I won't say the year, because that dates us.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had an amazing mentor. He was the voice. I went to the University of Evansville in Indiana, and he was the voice of the men's team, and covered their football team that they had at the time as well. And he decided let's get some communication major student athletes to help me come call these games because he got tired of calling them by himself. So he twisted my arm, and actually, that's actually when I declared my major. And so I started working, doing this in college, but it was on the radio side. And then my first TV gig, it took a while. I actually started working on the production side of the industry. I interned on the production side. And then finally, a Fox affiliate turned into a local cable station. And that was my first broadcasting, was through a cable network that I kind of helped sell and broadcast, and you name it. I was doing it at the station, but it was great experience. And we started covering some of the local college sports in Evansville.
And I would imagine that would help you become more well-rounded as an announcer. You understand the business on both sides of the camera. You understand sales. And I think that might help you in terms of being an announcer.
You know, I think it absolutely has, Dave. I have such an appreciation for every aspect of it. You know, and as you know, we'll show up a couple of hours ahead of time, but the crew has been there way before we even thought about getting there. There's so much that goes into it on the sales side, on the production side. So I do. I have a great appreciation for the entire industry, and I do think that it helped me in so many ways. But, you know, and even after, when I moved to the West Coast, then I played ball overseas in Australia. And then when I came back, I was kind of just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I had the opportunity in the Bay Area. I took a full-time job with a company, but was trying to get in and do the broadcasting gig on the side. And it was the cable co-op in the Bay Area. And I don't know if you remember cable co-op, but they were covering Stanford games. And some of my very first TV in the Bay Area was with cable co-op.
Oh, that's a great way to cut your teeth. Cause I had Kate Scott on a couple months ago, and she mentioned, hey, when you start, you do any gig you can get to get the reps.
Yeah.
For 50 absolutely. Bucks or whatever. You might even be willing to pay them.
Yes, you're right. Well, and I was working with a company full time, and then any extra time or vacation time, I actually made a connection with Tim Roy, the radio voice and a fabulous, fabulous individual, as you know, with the Golden State Warriors. And I remember that he had reached out saying, would you like to meet for lunch? And maybe I could, there's like an internship for you. And so, you know, at this point, you feel like, okay, I've worked in this business already. There's no way I'm working for free. And of course he said, well, I can't pay you anything. And I said, that's all right. Because you didn't think you'd say that you would pay, you'd work for free. But I knew that I wanted to get some experience with Tim, and he let me come to practices and do pregame and postgame interviews and anything I could help with the Warriors for a couple of seasons. And that was really great experience working with him.
How'd you get connected with the Monarchs in Sacramento?
Yeah, it kind of started with the work with the Warriors. I was just hanging out in the media room, and I knew that the league was going to be happening, but I didn't know anyone to contact anywhere. And there was a newsletter in the media room for a Warriors game one night, and in it listed every PR person for every team, and I just made a call to every single team. And I may have sent emails. I don't even know how prevalent email was at that point, but I don't know how we ever got a hold of anybody, honestly, in the past. But and every team got back to me, but not every team was doing anything, but Sacramento and Cleveland were. And I knew that Cleveland was pretty far away at that point, but I said I could drive to Sacramento. So they gave me an interview, and I was thrilled. They narrowed it down, and they picked me to do it. And I jumped at the chance, and I did a lot of driving back and forth to and from the Bay Area.
What do you think of the league now, 25 years later, not just surviving, but really making a difference in terms of social issues?
Oh, I tell you, Dave, I'm just thrilled about it. I'm so excited for it. I was a part of it for over 13 years, and you know, every year you would be asked, you know, how long do you think this is going to last? How long do you think, you know? And I just remember thinking, I hope it lasts as long as it can. I don't have a number, but I hope it just keeps going as long as it can. You know, that's how I felt about it. I'm not going to worry about it. I just want it to be there somehow, some way, you know, and I am thrilled that not only is it there, but there's so much talent. You can't even believe the talent that doesn't make rosters anymore. And I do think that they were smart in slowing down on, on growing the league, but I do think it's probably time to think about another city or two to try to add and grow and add some spots.
There was a player at Cal who asked me, it was her sophomore season, and she said, do you think the league will still be there when I get a chance? And that player was Leija Clarendon.
Yeah.
And has had such an impact in terms of what she's done on the national level and, of course, socially as well.
Oh, definitely so. I think the pandemic was such a challenging year for so many industries, the entertainment world, and what these athletes, but also the NBA athletes, the stand that they took for social justice and to get their words and their messages out there in the ways that they did it. I think that it was very honorable. I think that they had such class in the way they handled everything. And Leija in particular is one of my favorites. I've just always been such a fan. And just the strides that have been made across the board. Leija's a big part of it. And just so many others, even before and now continuing it.
You had a chance to work with her on that Sacramento Kings game, which was the all-female plus the non-binary broadcast team.
Yeah.
What about getting a chance to work with her and the whole experience anyway in terms of cracking that NBA?
Yeah, that was just a remarkable experience. And I was so, so honored and thrilled to be part of it. I have such a connection with the Sacramento community in particular, but I'm an NBA fan. That whole broadcast team, so many talented women, and the fact that Leija was able to step up to her platform as well. And I had the opportunity to work with Leija as my analyst for a few games in with Pac-12. And it's funny, as I remember early on, Leija would say, "Oh gosh, I caught myself just staring and watching the game and not realizing that maybe something needs to be said. The analyst needs to get involved here." Because I would just sit and look and say, "Okay, it's your turn." kind of elbow nudge. It's time to speak. But wow, I was so impressed because the role that Leija took on in sitting up and doing almost more like a set and a studio type setting, as and you've worked in so many different aspects of the industry. Everyone has a different prep. Everyone has a different feel, and I thought that Leija was so comfortable and so confident. I was really, really impressed.
That thing's hard to teach too, right? I know it's called talent for a reason because not everybody can do it.
Every role is so different, and sometimes it comes naturally to individuals and sometimes you have to really work on it and continue to work on it. And I feel like I've been doing this forever. And at the same time, I feel like I'm still learning different things in every single avenue, and every role is different. Like you said, a studio or a reporter, my mindset going into an event as a play-by-play compared to a reporter or an analyst or sitting in a studio, just completely different. As a matter of fact, this year, because of the pandemic, I am usually the courtside reporter for Westwood One Radio during the Final Four, and they would not allow more of our staff to go. So they asked me, would I be the studio host? And I have to say, Dave, and I know you've done this, you make it seem so easy, and all of the studio hosts that I listen to make it seem easy, but wow, my brain, I thought was going to explode. There was a lot happening. I'm trying to watch the game. I'm listening. We're cutting audio. It was just, it was really, the adrenaline was pumping, let me tell you. But I'm so glad that I tried it. I'm glad that I got the chance to do it.
Who do you really admire in the business?
Gosh, there's so many. And I have so many females in particular that I admire and I've looked up to. It all really started for me when I decided to declare my major. Robin Roberts was just really becoming a big name and with ESPN at the time. And I remember reaching out to Robin and she actually got back to me, and it was just, it meant so much to me that she took the time. I admire Ann Myers Drysdale. I admire Doris Burke. These are some of women that I have seen work their way up. Beth Mullins, I know how hard they've worked to get to where they are, and there's so many others before that even, but there's also so many male cohorts. I've listened over the years as an analyst, and I've had the pleasure of working with so many amazing play-by-play announcers. And, you know, Brian Wheeler was my first with the Monarchs, and he went to the Portland Trail Blazers. And then I worked with Jim Cosimore for many, many years. You know, Bob Buck was my mentor. He's the brother of the late, oh gosh, I've drawn a blank. Joe's dad. I can't think. He was the longtime voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. Jack Buck. Jack Buck. So, Steve Fizioc, who's with the Royals organization in the Bay Area, Dave Fleming. I mean, you name it. And I've just taken so much from these guys, and they've all been so wonderful to work with. And they've always been so inclusive, you know, just making sure if we were covering a men's game, hey, coach, this is, you know, if they already know somebody, making sure that I was part of the broadcast team. And that means a lot. And I try to do the same. You know, I try to do that same exact thing.
Was there anybody where you were stunned or blown away, where you've got to hold it in how cool it is that you're talking to that person? Because for me, Krista, Chick Hearn,
oh yeah,
returned my phone call,
right,
and I basically wet myself.
Right. Yeah. Well, I have to say that first call to Robin Roberts, and she left a voicemail back to me, that meant a lot. I was just really impressed. And I got the chance to, you know, talk with her over the years. That meant a lot. I think I was really impressed. My very first ESPN game, I worked with Beth Mullins. She was my play-by-play. And I was so nervous, and I had to go to the East Coast, and it was a Virginia, North Carolina game. It's so funny the things that I can't remember, Dave, but then there's certain things that you just won't forget. And I just remember I hadn't even really flown that much in my whole lifetime. You know, here I'm flying. You don't know where you're going. I don't even know if there was a thing called GPS yet. I don't know. Somehow I got to the hotel. Somehow I found her. We had breakfast that morning. And I remember her asking me, you know, how much had I worked with ESPN? How many games had I done? And I hated to tell her, but that was my first one. And, you know, I'm sure in her mind, she was thinking, great, this is just great. But you never would have known it. She was just like, oh, we're going to have a great time. This is going to be so fun. You know, she really just embraced the fact that here we are and we're going to have fun and don't worry and let's go, you know? So I really appreciated that from her. That meant a lot.
I'm thinking of all the sports you've done, volleyball, soccer, softball, basketball, sideline for others. Is there a play-by-play sport that you haven't done yet that you want to do?
Oh, good question. Yeah. Wow. You know, I played tennis in high school. Wasn't fabulous, but I really enjoy that. I really enjoy tennis. And even though play-by-play tennis is interesting. I love listening to Ted, and I have worked with Ted too, and he's wonderful. It's interesting because you definitely let it breathe, and that's definitely more about the analyst than it is about the play-by-play. But that is a sport that to go to a major event like a Wimbledon or a French Open, or, you know, cover the sport at that level, I think that would be so much fun. I would thoroughly enjoy that.
Yeah, you mentioned you're letting it breathe. I mean, there are times where that play-by-play announcer isn't saying anything for, you know, two or three points,
right,
much less
right,
two or three strokes.
Yeah. It's more like they're unconscious, and then someone must have to wake them up, or they have to set a timer or something. Yeah. Yeah. So there's not as much to that role, but it's important for them to make sure when to let the analyst and how to set those analysts up. Like you said, just making sure you do your job. That's really their role, is to not get in the way.
When you were starting, was that difficult at all to go from radio to TV, where you're not having to describe every touch and who has it, that you've got to let it breathe? And did it feel uncomfortable to do that?
Yes, it does. It's as a talker, I tend to be a talker for the most part.
But
you know, it is, it's really important though to let it breathe, but it's difficult at times depending on the event. And I know you've done events by yourself, but going from radio to TV, and I've jumped back and forth in both over the years, and remembering that to be more concise, to get the point across, to be as descriptive as you can, but you know, get your point in, get out of there from a radio standpoint. But, you know, TV, you have a little more flexibility because you don't have to talk about every single moment. That it is different. It takes a little, oh yeah, remind yourself to either let it breathe or not to step on the play-by-play if you're doing radio, and vice versa.
Are you pretty critical of your own work where you go back and watch it later or beat yourself up, or do you let it go?
Always. Yeah. If I go back and listen, I've almost gotten to the point anymore where I don't even go back half the time, but when I used to definitely go over some of my work more, very critical. I don't like to have it on. I definitely will just go in the other room or just kind of listen. But, I don't watch it too often. It's definitely a little painful. It's not my favorite thing.
No, you're great. Would you be offended if I told you I didn't know there was a Tell City, Indiana?
No, I'm not offended. I am not offended. I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't know. I'm actually more surprised when people do know. It's only about an hour west of Louisville, Kentucky. It's right on the Ohio River, southern Indiana. So people that kind of know the Louisville area, or if there's one highway that goes through and there's a sign for my hometown, but the hometown's still a little more, little ways up the road. So, but a lot of people say, oh, I've seen that sign off the freeway. So that's about as close as most people have gotten to Tell City, Indiana.
Is welcome to and thanks for coming to on the same sign?
almost. We do have some stoplights. It's not bad. We do have some stoplights. We have a McDonald's, a Dairy Queen. What more do you need, Dave?
Walmart.
There is a Walmart. Yes. And I have to say I try to not go there when I go there because, it's hard to see a lot of local businesses kind of come and go because of that. And at the same time, it brings jobs and it brings a lot of things that you can't always get to. But now I'm starting to see more and more small businesses trying to open back up again. And it's refreshing. And when I'm there, I always try to go to the local coffee place or wherever to try to help them stay alive.
How often do you get back there?
I was just there. I had not been back in a while. I used to get there about two times a year. The holiday time is really tricky. Sometimes I have some time off with work, but it's not easy to get there because of the weather. You're just hoping that you get in and you can get out of there. But usually at least once a year, but then with the pandemic, I hadn't seen my family in over a year. So I just had a visit. I just got to go visit, and my nephews are graduating from college and got to see them. And so it was nice. It was nice to see. I saw a lot of family and some friends. So it was fun.
Do you know the population there? Because I do.
I don't now. I know that back in the day, there were around 8,000, but I'm pretty sure it's probably below that.
Yes, 7,272.
Oh. Okay. All right. Not too bad.
Are a lot of the folks there forever?
Yeah, a lot of them are. I mean, there's a lot of hometown names, families, that big families. And the names, and that was the trickiest thing. I'm starting to not know a lot of the names now it's friends, kids, and their kids. And now you're trying to figure out who's related to whom, but yeah, a lot do. And then certain classes, my class, a lot of my classmates kind of all went off and kind of left, and not a lot of them stayed in town, but there are definitely still some that are there or somewhere in the vicinity, not too far away, Chicago, Nashville, Lexington, Louisville, somewhere, St. Louis. They're not too far.
Was it a culture shock when you went to some of these bigger cities?
It definitely was. Absolutely. I played ball, played basketball. So I had been to Chicago. I'd been to some larger Midwest cities, St. Louis and Detroit. But moving west, it was a wonderful shock. It was difficult. I had a lot to learn. But I learned so much. And I think about the fact that had I not made that move, I don't know how much I would have learned about different cultures and just so many things that I had no idea about, especially in the Western part of our country. And so I did go to, my school was a liberal arts school. I felt like it had a nice diversity, a good group of so many different, it was an engineering, physical therapy, nursing school, and liberal arts, obviously. So, I felt like I was really happy that there was diversity within, my community. And then moving west, that definitely helped me, but it took some time. Just pronunciations of names. I had no idea. And so that I had to work on, but I finally got better.
What do you like to cook?
What do I like to cook? I like to grill, kind of a griller. I'm kind of that person that sets a timer and then, you know, goes and fixes something else, then goes back out and flips whatever I've got on the grill. But I'm definitely a griller. I'm a meat and potatoes kind of gal. So I wish I was a vegetarian because I do love animals, but I definitely like the meat and potatoes. So I don't mind a steak here and there. I try to eat healthy, but I like to have a balanced meal, Dave. I like roasted broccoli. I like to have a green and a starch and some kind of a protein. That's how I like to do it as best I can.
Do you cook ever any veggies on the grill?
I do. Yeah. Asparagus and zucchini or squash. And I've even through the winter when it was colder, I was roasting in the oven broccoli, which I've fallen in love with this roasted broccoli. But now you can also kind of put that on the grill if, you know, that's kind of fun too. Char it up a little bit. How about you?
Well, I'm not great. I have this, chicken dish that I think is fantastic over penne pasta. Oh. And it's got sun-dried tomatoes and garlic with pesto. Oh. Nice. And
that sounds
good. I think you'd like it.
I think I would too. I'm a penne pasta guy. There aren't many pastas that I don't like, but I do like that you have the chicken in there. That's good to throw a little protein in.
It's hard to cook though for like one or sometimes, you know, maybe two. It sucks. Yeah.
It's definitely different, but I don't mind leftovers. I try to think ahead. Okay. What's my week going to be like? I don't want to throw stuff out. Am I going to be home? Am I not? Do I need to go to the store? What do I have to do here? So I try to be creative with leftovers and try to think about something else I can do with the leftovers as well. Make another dish if I can. So.
Like Krista's surprise where you mix things? Right.
Sometimes it's definitely a surprise. Sometimes I'm mixing different cultures together and I'm like, oh, that's fine. I don't mind.
Hey, what's this that you said in an interview about like blocking out every hour of your day? That sounds so crazy. I mean, what if you spend an extra 15 minutes on this one thing that's not in your outline? How does that
work?
Yeah,
right. Gosh, I don't think I do that as much as I used to. I'm not quite as bad about it anymore.
Tell me how that started, Krista. How old were you and what issues were you having?
Right. I had issues. That's for sure.
Putting my feet on the couch.
I've had a lot of therapy. No. I don't know. I think, I'm definitely one of these people that I'm kind of a list maker. I think it kind of started with that. And I just always, like your biggest concern is I'm going to miss an event. I'm going to oversleep. I'm going to miss a flight. So it kind of started just trying to make sure. I even do a packing list, not always, but sometimes, but I like to have a general outline to know, make sure I don't forget something. Maybe I'm just worried I'm going to be forgetful. I don't know.
Were you disorganized when you were younger?
I don't really think I was, but I think I'm fairly organized, but I have kind of an odd organizing system. But I feel like I've always been a fairly neat person and I can tidy up a stack of something, but that doesn't mean I'm going to file everything perfectly in a way. You know, I know where everything is in that pile. That's how I work.
Well, one thing I noticed as far as being organized, because I love watching other announcers, what we call their boards, you know, how they set up their broadcast, how they organize their material. Mm-hmm. And yours is immaculate.
Until I start scribbling on it, then I can't. It's sad though, Dave. Sometimes I write stuff on it and I can't read my own writing. My writing, I just don't have time to write full words anymore, I guess. I don't know, but I can hardly read my writing anymore. But yeah, I like to have the general info there as best I can. And it's going to be interesting with the Olympics because I'm not completely certain how I will do or if I will even really do actual boards. This is going to be tricky. I'm going to be tested on this one. But otherwise, I do like to have my cheat sheets, I guess, to have those nuggets and try to cram as much other info in the brain as I can.
Are there other judo announcers or what's it called now? It's not synchronized swimming. It is?
Yeah, artistic swimming. Yeah.
Artistic mm-hmm. swimming. Other announcers that have done that you can kind of pick their brains and you know, maybe figure out some kind of system.
Yes, absolutely. I'm definitely going to. I'm really lucky that there's several other announcers that I know that are doing other sports, but that I know have done these sports. Well, I'm not completely certain about the artistic swimming, but I will find somebody that's for certain. But judo, I definitely know someone who's done that before, and maybe one other person. So I'm going to reach out. I also know people that have been part of this swing team where, you know, these are my two sports that I'm going to know. But I also know that every once in a while they'll get desperate and they've overlapped two sports that are hitting at the same time. And you might at the last minute need to volunteer and say, hey, I'll jump in. I'll help you with Taekwondo or whatever it might be. And with that, you are really leaning on the analyst because you probably have 15 minutes to just get the main names and figure out what you're doing. And there you go. So that'll be exciting if that happens.
I have no doubt you're going to crush it.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm thrilled. I'm really thrilled about it.
No, you've earned it. You've paid your dues. You're not flash in the pan that you did a couple games. I mean, you look at your resume, you're talking about 25 years.
Yeah.
To get here?
Sure. and plus I've stopped doing the math. I don't do the math on that. And I don't try to figure out how old the student athletes' parents are anymore either, because and when they were born.
They look so young now.
Don't they?
Oh.
I know.
And last thing, what kind of impact do you think Lindsay Gottlieb will have at USC?
Oh, wow. I'm so excited. So excited to have her back. I was thrilled for her when she left and went to the Cavaliers. I thought that was really remarkable and exciting. And I think she's just such an amazing student of the game. But I'm thrilled that she's back in the Pac-12. I just think she's so smart. She's just a brilliant mind. And it's going to be interesting. I really believe that her experience in the NBA is going to help her in Southern California with the recruiting, you know, bringing in just a wide range of different student athletes to USC. USC is just always one of those schools where I think they should be the best at almost everything. You know, they have so many incredible student athletes and the academics there, and you know, you name it, it's such a plus, and she's going to be awesome.
With my ties to Cal, I'm always rooting for Sharman Smith, but there'll be a part of me that's, you know, rooting for Lindsay to do well at SC too.
Definitely so. Absolutely.
Hey, you're the best, and I will be watching. I'll be stealing your recipes. I'll be listening to your music. What's your favorite chewing gum, by the way? I got to, you know, put that in my list too.
Yep. I'm a gum chewer big time. I believe in having the gum in every bag, purse, you name it. It's with me. And I am an Orbitz sweet mint. Sweet mint.
I pretty much got you down over 37 minutes.
I know. I like that question. And I found that flavor, and I don't know what it is about it. It's kind of sweet, but it also gives you a little mint. So there you go. It's not too hot, it's not too sweet, just right.
Everything you wanted to know about Krista Blunk, but we're terrified to ask.
Right.
Good luck to you, my friend. We'll leave you with a little pink on the way out, and good luck at the Olympic Games.
David, thanks so much for having me. So if you're too school for cool,